Sound of Hockey episode 270. We're calling this one the Sam Reinhardt episode. Why are we calling it that, John?
Sam Reinhardt is on a little heater right now. He's got 8 goals in 8 games, including a hat trick against Colorado. And he's a pending UFA, but he'll probably sign with Florida.
I think, did you say 8 goals in 8 games? I think it's 10 goals in 8 games. He has goals in 8 consecutive games. So I think you just blew it. So we're off on a bad start, but that's okay. Sam Reinhardt is red hot. The Kraken, meanwhile, were red hot. Now they're playing sick and injured and all kinds of different things. We're coming to you remotely because I'm in New York City. New York City, where the Kraken played the New York Rangers on Tuesday, and it didn't go very well. If there's echoes, I don't know. We've MacGyvered a recording setup here. I'm recording into a microphone on my phone that I've never used before. And I feel like I'm in a pretty echoey room. So if the sound quality isn't so good this week, we apologize. But I think it'll be okay, hopefully, question mark. We do have a fantastic episode coming your way, though, because there's a lot to talk about from the Kraken standpoint, but also we have a really, really fun interview with Brian Boucher on this episode that I think y'all are going to love. So stick around for that. No reviews to share from Apple Podcasts. I think that's, what, 2 or 3 weeks of that, which is a concerning trend, definitely. We're going to need the listeners to really pull through because it's just, it's really negatively impacting my mood. Just wanted to remind you of that. Also wanted to remind you all of our Patreon. Check out patreon.com/soundofhockey. You can become a Patreon member where we do extra mailbag episodes twice a month. We do some meetups. We do all kinds of different bonus things for Patreon members. So pop over. You can become a member. You can support us. You can tell us there that you appreciate us, because we certainly appreciate you. Is that enough? Is that enough housekeeping type stuff? Should we get on with the
show?
Okay.
Yeah.
Speaking of shows, I've seen a couple here in New York this week.
What'd you see?
Which has been fun. We saw Gutenberg the Musical, which was cool. It was kind of silly. It had Josh Gad and Andrew Rannells, which were the original Book of Mormon cast. So it was kind of fun to see them together. And then we also saw Merrily We Roll Along, which was very good. That had Daniel Radcliffe in it. So two good shows.
It's been real quick. You brought it up. I saw Book of Mormon on Sunday, traveling show in Seattle. Yeah. So it's in Seattle, right? Well, it's closed now, but there's a line in there where they changed the line to say release the Kraken, and like no joke, the theater popped. Like, they were super excited. Like, I couldn't believe there was that much like knowledge crossover in that setting, but there was a pop. I haven't shared that with anybody, but I'm like, and I checked with my wife after, I'm like, I wasn't just imagining it was a pop. That was like, they recognized that it was release the Kraken lyric, so, or saying. So I don't know. Maybe there's something to this hockey thing in Seattle.
There could be. I've heard that before, that it seems to be working quite nicely. Yeah, what else have I done here? That's great that you saw that show, though. I love that show,
John. How was the food? How was the food in New York?
Food's been fantastic. We actually went to a restaurant that we went to in Italy like a year or two back that opened recently in New York. It was really, really good. So food's been great. Food's always good in New York. There's so many different. I've been on a pretty strict bagel diet. Like, that's most of what I've eaten. Bacon, egg, and cheese on a toasted bagel with a black and white cookie is the order. You can't go wrong with that. And I've kind of been like comparing and contrasting, right? Like, well, how's the consistency? I've gotten some heat for how I say that word recently. Bagel. It's the one like word that I apparently say wrong. I tend to say bagel because that's just how I grew up saying it.
That's Canadian style. Yeah,
it's Minnesotan. But yeah, people give me a hard time for that. And it's weird because I have a really, like, I don't hear it. When I say it, it doesn't sound wrong to me, you know, versus if I say like, oh, or something like that, like I hear it when it comes out of my mouth. I'm like, oh, that sounded really, really Minnesotan. But for some reason with that word bagel, which I've been trying really hard to fix in my vernacular.
Curtis, how do you say bagel?
I say bagel like a normal person, but I would have thought that.
But you also say burry.
Apparently.
Yeah, invents words too.
But I would have thought, you know, from your long history living in New York previously, you would have landed on bagel by now. But
well, this is where I started to experience the ridicule, right? Yeah. Because I very much enjoy that round bread. I don't want to say it again. I'm afraid to say it again. But Yeah, I do very much enjoy it. It is my breakfast of choice when I am traveling to New York. So it's tough because it's like the one word in the dictionary that I have a hard time saying the way that the rest of the population says.
That's the only word
you
have a hard time with.
That's the only word that I struggle with. So anything else I need to talk about? I got to walk through the NHL offices. That was really cool. Yeah, super cool. Definitely a cool experience.
How'd your meeting with Gary go?
Pretty good. I gave him some ideas. You know, I told him that they really missed the boat on Bowie Got Back at the Winter Classic. And cool. He was receptive, you know. He said he was going to add it to the idea box for future. So that's really all that I was hoping to get out of that, you know, was cool. Just letting him know that they missed an opportunity.
Yeah.
I mean, what else would you have wanted me to tell him?
No, I think you covered it. That would be on my list.
Yeah, I mean, that's pretty much all there really is. Like, we don't really have any complaints right now in Seattle as far as the league is concerned. So all things are working out there. I just went in and said, hey, you're doing a great job. And I'm sure that that's what people would have wanted me to say. Okay, let's talk about the Kraken, who have, well, they had a great heater. We predicted they'd never lose again. Unfortunately, that didn't come to fruition. They did, unfortunately, lose twice in the last two games that they played, both games came in back-to-backs against Pittsburgh and New York. We haven't yet talked about Washington, where they won 4-1. That was like a pretty easy-looking win against a team that's been surprisingly good this season. And then Columbus, I thought that they started to kind of have some... It looked like they were starting to show some chinks in the armor. And, you know, they had Matty Beniers left that night. Andre Burakovsky left the game that night. Vince Dunn disappeared after that game. I think Adam Larson played that one but disappeared from Pittsburgh, right? Am I remembering that correctly? Yep. So they've had a lot of things going on here. They're not hiding the fact that they have a lot of illness floating around the locker room right now, which made me quite uncomfortable about going into the room.
Yeah, I can imagine.
At Madison Square Garden. We were in and out of there pretty fast, but yeah, I mean, you know that they're definitely dealing with something. It's one of those things that's causing guys to actually miss time because they're not feeling well enough to play hockey. So yeah, it's not a good situation. And meanwhile, they do have some guys that are getting hurt. We don't have confirmation, but you know, the guess on Matty Beniers is that he got hurt on that big Cole Sillinger hit in Columbus. And then who knows, Vince Dunn goes out after that. I mean, that's probably, you have to think it's from the fight, right? That he had standing up for Matty.
That seems like a logical conclusion, but no official word, but we'll never get it. So
right. So, I mean, that's a nice little 2-for-1 special there for Cole Sillinger, although he also took a lot of punches in his face from Vince Dunn. So it's one of those things where it's like, you know, I'm really impressed by Vince Dunn for immediately jumping on Cole Sillinger there. And it's what you kind of want to see when something like that happens. It was a vicious hit from kind of the blind side. Matty did hit the boards in an awkward way. And I'm pretty confident, although it's not confirmed, but I'm pretty confident that that's how he got hurt. And yeah, I guess.
He did play a couple shifts after that. That's kind of the unfortunate thing, right? Like that he was playing injured for a couple more shifts. Now, who knows what the injury was? One thing on the Dunn, I love the Dunn response. And I think we all kind of agree that was great to see. However, that is an instigator, right? Like how did he not get an instigator in that one?
And actually, Sillinger took the extra penalty there for the boarding, right?
Yeah.
So they came out of that with a power play, which I thought was surprising. I was wondering that myself, actually, when I watched the game. But yeah.
And it was pretty important in the game, too. I mean, they scored on that power play.
It was the turning point.
Yeah.
That was a complete turning point. That's where they went up by one and then never looked back after that. So I'll take it. Like, I don't care. I'll take it.
No.
Like, I feel like we've been on the opposite side of some calls sometimes, so...
My reaction was the same as yours, John. I mean, he came in, dropped his gloves, and went right after him before Sillinger could really react. I mean, that's, in my mind, I mean, I know I've seen the rules since then, and maybe you could squint your eyes and make a case the other direction, but it seemed like an instigator. I was fine with it because, you know, earlier in the game, there'd been some instances of the Blue Jackets getting in on Joey Decord, and there wasn't really a response. So I liked that there was a response there. There was also, even more important than that, it was a really good game in terms of resilience for the team on the whole. They were down 1-0, tied it, down 2-1, tied it. Dunn had this the response on the Beniers hit. It's the type of resilience you really love to see 9 games into a winning streak. I mean, they very easily could have said, well, it's not our night, right? And that wasn't the case. They pushed back all night, end up with a big win. And then it's just really a shame that, you know, between the illnesses and then the couple of injuries there, the team has just looked really flat in these last two games. They just didn't really look like they had much of a chance either night. It's just kind of a shame.
It's almost like they said, you know what? It's just not our night. Those other two nights.
I mean,
not the night that you were talking about.
I think in the Penguins game, they really just didn't have it. And I don't know if maybe that was the worst they were in terms of illness, but they just didn't have energy anywhere in that game. I thought the Rangers game, they pushed back at times. It's just, you know, Driedger wasn't standing on his head in the way that, you know, Joey has a couple times during this streak early in the game to keep the opponent off the scoreboard, and they just couldn't catch up. I mean, the Rangers' skill is just, you know, stands out.
It's funny. I made this remark on our Discord about sometimes when you see them play teams like the Rangers, you realize like the high-end talent gap, right? There's five or six really good players on the Rangers that would be the top player on the Kraken if they were on the Kraken. So it's just, you know, and if you don't have the depth that they, you know, with Burakovsky and Beniers being out, then like it's really tough to compete. Like I know they can win those games, they can play high-end talent, but it's so noticeable when you see, you know, Panarin and Zibanejad and, you know, Kreider and Fox and even like K'Andre Miller, I really like, you know, he's pretty young, but it's just, man, that it's so talented compared to the Kraken. So yeah, I agree. I thought the Rangers game was actually a pretty good effort considering the circumstances. Pittsburgh, like you said, Curtis, just looked flat. So
yeah, they definitely, I asked Hextall if he thought they had more jump after the game, and he said yes. But he also said, you know, what they're dealing with in the locker room doesn't clear up after one day. So thought that was a fair point. They are going through a lot right now. Hopefully, you know, they took a full day off on Wednesday here to travel to Edmonton, which of course they're going to effing Edmonton right now, to go take on the team that hasn't lost in like a century. And they're really limping in there on the last game of their road trip. So hopefully by the time you hear this, they will have won 6-0 against the Edmonton Oilers. But I mean really, like, they need to get some guys back here, right? They go into the Pittsburgh game without their top defenseman, without their top center, and without one of their best offensive forwards in Burakovsky. And then, oh, by the way, they also lose their top shutdown guy in Adam Larson after 4 minutes of ice time, right? So clearly he's trying to tough it out. He's obviously not at 100% on the game against New York. And Hextall indicated that there were more guys, including Riker Evans, who's filling in for Vince Dunn. He said he wasn't feeling 100% and he played like 26 minutes. So it is not a great situation for them right now. Obviously, you hope that they're going to figure it out quickly because as Jordan Eberle said, they picked up a lot of ground with their streak, and then to lose a few games in a row and give it all right back, that'll slip away pretty quickly. So hopefully they get healthy here as quickly as possible and they can start winning some games again.
And the one thing real quick, and you called out Edmonton. Yeah, they're heading into a buzzsaw there. Then they play Toronto on Sunday. Now, Toronto will be playing a back-to-back, so that's one kind of glimmer of hope, but Toronto's still a pretty good team despite them losing a bit lately. But after those two games, they actually have a little bit of relief because they have Chicago, St. Louis, and then Columbus. And so all of a sudden, okay, the next two games are going to be challenging, right? If they can get a point or two or maybe even more, great. But they do have three kind of, you know, there's no easy game in the NHL, but at least you have those three games coming after the real tough ones. So they could right the ship pretty quick after the next two games if they don't come away with many points.
And just one underlying trend that was consistent throughout this week and actually going back further than that I think the team needs to figure out how to correct is slow starts. The last two games you might be able to excuse a bit due to the illnesses and, you know, just the injuries, the key players that are out. But, you know, going back to even the Capitals and the Blue Jackets game and going back to last week, they've had a number of games in a row where the other team has been on them from the jump. And for a while there, Joey was keeping them in it. You know, Joey Decord kept them in the Capitals game, kept them in the Columbus Blue Jackets game. But that's not really a prescription for success. John's talked about it a lot. The first goal makes a big difference in how the game is played. And your goaltender, it's not sustainable long term to kind of take a period to find your game, because more often than not, you're going to be playing from behind, and that's a difficult way to play. You look at the last five games in total, including the Buffalo game from last week, due to those slow starts, they've lost the shot quality battle in all of those games. And now they're 3-2 in those games. They had some good goaltending performances, good finishing, but the kind of underlying kind of concerning trend of not really coming out full guns blazing has been there for a little while. And it's going to be hard to correct it against Edmonton and Toronto, of course, but they're going to need to, because Decord's been playing out of his mind, but you can't expect that to go on forever.
Yeah. Meanwhile, Matty Beniers goes to injured reserves. You know, he's out at least a week. That's obviously a concern. John Hayden got called up as just kind of a reinforcement. I thought he played fine, but he's playing a true fourth line role, so he's not getting a ton of time. That's one thing, is like they went from having effectively, and Jared McCann actually said this, they have four second lines, right? They went from having four second lines to having three second lines and a true fourth line by losing those two guys. So, and the fourth line is playing like a fourth line, right? Much lower number of minutes. And then also they moved Philip Grubauer to long-term injury reserve. I am curious as to what's going on with him, because it seemed like he was starting to get closer to coming back before the road trip. And then we just haven't really heard anything. And I don't know if he's on the road trip. I personally haven't seen him, but I also was only at one game. So yeah, I don't know. It's interesting that there hasn't been any movement there. But what does that mean, Curtis, for him going on LTIR? What does that actually mean for the Kraken?
Well, LTIR, you're allowed to use a long-term injury designation if a player is projected to be out 10 games or 24 days. But if you put someone on LTIR, it can be retroactive to the time of the injury. And Grubauer's been out longer than a month and longer than 10 days already. So they can kind of do it at will at this point without necessarily affecting his timeline to return. I don't have any other insight about when that might be. Like you were saying, Darren, it doesn't seem like he's popped his head up on this trip at any point. So maybe he's just continued his rehab in Seattle. I'm not sure. But I didn't take it necessarily as an indication that he's had any type of setback. I think it's more that in order to get John Hayden on the roster, which they felt they needed to do, they took Devin Shore out. So maybe he was dealing with the same illness, or who knows, but they felt they needed to get John Hayden on the roster. And in order to do that, they needed cap space. There are only a few ways they could have done that. Putting a player on long-term injury was one of the ways to do that. They could have done that with Belmar. They chose to do it with Grubauer. I don't know that it necessarily means anything about his timeline to return. It could, but it doesn't. It was more linked to their cap situation in the moment, I think.
Other Kraken news, not related to what's happening on the ice, but in the stands, there's been some news about season tickets. This is a very exciting topic for me, that's for sure, but I know the fans get worked up about this. So what's the deal here, fellas? Are they raising ticket prices next year, or what are they doing?
So yeah, an email went out to season ticket holders. Either you're renewing or you're setting up plans for next season, and they are freezing season ticket prices, which is nice, obviously, that prices don't go up, even though a lot of us sign contracts where prices can increase legitimately, and that tends to happen, particularly when teams get better. So that's nice. No ticket increase. Curtis, you have any perspective here?
No, I mean, the team sent out a survey to season ticket holders a few weeks ago at this point, where it was pretty evident that they were sensitive to the price issue. They realize that there are issues on the real resale market and just concerns generally about the price of tickets. So it seemed like it was kind of headed in this direction. Again, I guess, you know, a token from the team to their fan base that they at least had the right to increase prices, and they didn't.
Yeah.
And our last piece of Kraken news before we get to our interview with Brian Boucher, let's go down on the farm. Moo! Nicholas Koko has moved teams in Liga. He is going from Carpat to Pelicans. I love the team is just called Pelicans, right? It's not like the it's not like
is that
the
a
Finland
city name
Pelicans
or is it
or
just
the,
yeah.
The Helsinki Pelicans. No, they're just they're just Pelicans. So that's who he's going to be playing for now. I guess they had brought in somebody. They signed another goalie for Carpats. Then he had moved down to like third string. And so now he's going to hopefully get a little bit more opportunity at Pelicans. But never a good sign when you're one of the two goalies and they sign somebody else to come and be the goalie that you're, I don't know. Like, has Koko played that well in the pro league there? I know he didn't have the best outing.
He's played relatively well. I think he started the season hotter than he kind of has played lately. The one thing is his winning percentage, which is like kind of a weird stat. I mean, it's important, obviously, but it doesn't tell the whole story, right? You can play really well and then lose. But his winning percentage is the lowest amongst those three goalies. And the word around the campfire is that he was going to be the third string. So, you know, if he wants to be an NHL goalie, which I'm sure he does, he needs to kind of find another team to kind of get some more ice time. So we'll keep an eye on that. Carpat's like kind of one of the premier teams and is under a lot of pressure to win because they have a high payroll. And so there's probably a little bit more emphasis on winning than kind of developing players. So that's one thing to kind of consider when the move happens.
And you know, a team that's just called Pelicans is not
focused on winning. They're just
they're more in the entertainment industry.
Selling merch and just trying to scoop up as many fish as possible in their huge beak.
And one kind of bonus really down on the farm, Edward Chalet actually finally joined the Kitchener Rangers alongside Carson Rakoff in the OHL today, Wednesday, and they were playing on the same line. Look at that. So our official third team is getting very interesting to watch.
Yeah.
Fun for to watch them. Approximately one third of the game. It's getting very interesting to watch.
Exactly.
So.
Yeah.
All right. Let's get to our fantastic interview with now our very good friend. I think he's a very good friend now because that was just a super fun conversation. Here he is, TNT analyst and goalie extraordinaire, Brian Boucher. We now welcome onto Sound of Hockey a very special guest. He was a goalie in the NHL for parts of 13 seasons, and he appeared in games for 7 different teams in all, playing 328 career games, plus 43 playoff games. Now he's an analyst for TNT and NBC Sports Philadelphia, covering the Flyers. Brian Boucher, thank you so much for joining us. Welcome to Sound of Hockey.
Yeah, my pleasure. Great to be with you.
So we're very excited to be talking to you. We've been big fans of your work here as a broadcaster and obviously as a goalie, but you're pretty fresh off of the Winter Classic in Seattle. I'm curious what your kind of favorite moments were from that experience and some of your takeaways from that day.
Oh, boy, weather was great. Crowd was great. Great facility. What a ballpark that is. But probably the thing that stands out most to me is Joey Decord walking away with the first shutout in Winter Classic history. What a story he's been for the Kraken. You know, obviously, as an ex-goalie, you can appreciate goaltenders, but a kid who's kind of taken the long road to get to the NHL and has had to take his lumps along the way and finally getting some success. So, boy, what a nice story. Good New England kid. So you cheer for kids like that. Very happy for him. I thought that was a great moment.
Yeah, and we know him pretty well, and he is just the nicest dude you can ever meet in this sport. So, yeah, it's really easy to root for him, and it's cool to see him kind of having a little bit of a star turn here. We have some Joey-related questions lined up for you here, so we'll kind of put a pin in that, but we'll circle back. What do you think the reaction was, though, to the game nationally? I know within the Seattle market, people seemed very happy with how that event went. I personally thought it went off without a hitch, but, like, you know, from the outside looking in, do you think the reaction to it was similar, or are we just a little bit too close to it to think it was a really positive day? You know what I mean?
I think it's always a positive day. You know, it's a way to celebrate the game, the NHL. I'm sure there are some fans out there who probably are, you know, like the outdoor game is like, okay, we've seen it before. I'm sure you get a section of those fans. You always get those people. But I think by and large, you get people that want to tune in to see what it looks like, what that ballpark looks like, what the crowd looks like, the jerseys. I think everybody's kind of intrigued by that Winter Classic game because there's just been so many different storylines in the different Winter Classics, whether it be weather or teams or Original Six or expansion teams. I think it was a great, I think it was received very well. And for maybe people out in the East that don't know these teams out in the West, they got a chance to see two franchises that weren't around. If they were sleeping for the last 6-7 years, they didn't know that these teams existed. And they got to see two markets that are just killing it hockey-wise. I mean, Vegas is doing a great job, and Seattle's right behind them. A beautiful building that they play in, a team that made the playoffs last year, and a team that is fighting clawing and trying to get back into the playoffs once again. And boy, they look like they may do it.
And you actually played in that arena before. It looked a little different, didn't it? back in the day.
Yeah.
Any memories from going through Seattle and playing the Thunderbirds?
Gosh, they had some rabid fans when I was playing in the Western League. I played in that old building. I don't know what the heck that building was called. What was that one building that had the square corners?
Memorial Coliseum. Yeah.
Oh my God.
And we like talked. We've talked to Jamie Huskroft before, and he talked about, he had this expression, what was it, Darren?
It was something about coming out smelling like beer or something.
Yeah. Yeah. Goes in like Old Spice, comes out smelling like Old Spice. So
that building, I couldn't believe it when I first played there. In the corners at the beginning, when you go up for warm up, it was the Zamboni or whatever, how they were to resurface the ice there. By you got time to the next period, the Zamboni couldn't get in the corner, so it was snowy in there because it was such square corners, and the fans were just nuts. I got to be honest with you. I mean, I always remember going to Seattle and just fans being wild and guys banging on the glass, and that was to us kids playing junior. That was an NHL environment. I mean, yeah. It was such a big building, the old Key Arena, and the fans were nuts. I always enjoyed going there, man. It was fun.
So, and I've always wondered how you go from high school in Rhode Island all the way to the Western League. At the time, was there not like regional rights or whatever? Because right. Like that wouldn't happen now.
Right. That's exactly what happened. Now the New England kids would go to the Quebec League, anywhere else, Mid-Atlantic, Michigan, and those kids go to the OHL. And then I think anything Wisconsin, Minnesota West is Western League. So,
yeah.
I made the U.S. under 17 team in the summer. The year prior, I was cut in the first round at 16. So I kind of wasn't on like the radar for people. But the next year, I made the 17 team. And from there, it was like colleges coming after you, major junior teams coming after you. I was playing tier two in Ontario in the Metro Toronto League for a team called the Wexford Raiders. And I was on my way to go to school. Like I wanted to go to college and a couple of schools were dragging their feet, offering scholarships, and Tri-City had me on their protected list in the Western League, and I didn't even know it because OHL teams were calling. They were like, are you interested in playing in the OHL? You're rated early second round in the draft. And I was like, oh, yeah, I'm interested. But then I found out I was put on this Western League protected list. So we called Tri-City to see if they would release me so that I could go to the OHL. And they said, well, why don't you come check it out? You got 48 hours. And don't lose your eligibility. I said, come check it out. If you don't like it, we'll let you go. No hard feelings. I flew out there to see a game against Kamloops with my parents. And in that game, I mean, there must have been 10 draft eligible guys playing. And Jerome McGinley, Shane Doan, Damon Lankow, Terry Ryan. Place was jam-packed, unreal game, fights galore. I looked at my father and I said, I'm coming here.
Oh, wow.
And my dad said, go for it. He was so supportive. And I didn't even think of the repercussions. I was like, I would have had a scholarship coming in the next probably month. This was November, I think it was. And I said, screw it. I want to be an NHL player. Went there and the rest was history.
When you grew up, like I grew up in Minnesota and I knew nothing about the Canadian junior leagues, right? And I think when you grow up in a market that has different routes of its own and probably the more traditional draw for a kid like you is going to college, right? Yep. And so I imagine, like, I think about myself getting out to Seattle and being like, oh, this is really intense high-level hockey, and these kids are really, like, a lot of them are really close to the NHL, and you just don't realize that it even exists in the U.S. So it's I imagine that being a pretty eye-opening experience for you to get to see that game. That's cool. So
it was, yeah, for sure.
And like Tri-City, like as far as the city goes, it's kind of in the middle of nowhere, right? It's got to be a little bit different for you too. But I think we even talked to Stu Barnes about his first trip to Tri-Cities, and because he was part of the relocation. And so he was just like, oh, all of a sudden he's in the middle of the,
Great though. I mean, like it was mild in the winter. Like, when I, a kid from Rhode Island, I thought Washington State, they got all this snow and you got no snow. It was desert. And we didn't get the snow or rain that you get through the passes there when you go to Seattle. It was great. And honestly, it's a small town in a lot of ways. So the fans come and watch you play. You're really the only ticket in town. It was a basketball team at the time there as well. But, that was it. I mean, so the fans did a great job of supporting us. And I had a great 3 years there. My last year there, we were bad. We were a lot of 16-year-olds. And I actually had an opportunity to get traded to Seattle at the trade deadline there. And I didn't know how to handle it, to be honest with you. I felt like I was turning my back on the team if I accepted the trade. And, probably in hindsight, I wish I would have, because I think they lost in the Western League final that year. It would have been nice to try and play on a loaded up team. So, yeah, what could have been.
That's how it goes. It's always funny to us too, right? About your 18-year-olds getting traded or whatever, right? And they might not even live in the country, right? So pretty fascinating. So I do want to go back to your career real quick, being an analyst. You kind of jumped on the scene pretty quick. And I think early on, there was some really positive feedback about how good of an analyst you were. And it was really kind of fascinating to see you jump on the scene. When did you kind of think about being an analyst and start evaluating what is this an option that to explore?
Yeah, I think playing in a market like Philadelphia, where you're constantly in the in the media spotlight as a goaltender, you're always constantly dealing with the media. I think you kind of learn how to handle it. I think, and I think that's where I kind of got my knack for it. And they ask you tough questions in Philly after games. As a goalie, so constantly you're breaking the game down immediately after your play. And I just think that's where I kind of got started in it. You just kind of evaluate your play, you evaluate your team's play, and, you give analysis right on the spot for the reporters. So I think that's where it all started for me. And I had plenty of people as I was playing just say, you should think about this side of it when you're done playing. And I was always like, man, media was killing me in Philadelphia. now I'm going to be one of those guys, although I still don't look at myself as like a print media guy. I think of myself as a TV guy, so maybe we're a little bit different. But yeah, just people kind of, Keith Jones was a big he was a big help too, and a big mentor for me. He was a teammate of mine when we played. His career got cut short. He got into it, and we had a conversation one time, I remember, after a morning skate in Pittsburgh. And he was on the bench and I'd done some extra on the ice. And he just told me, he's like, you got to do this job, kid, when you're all done. And I just remembered that conversation forever. And I'm sure he might not even remember the conversation, but he said, when you're done playing, you got to do this. It's a great job. And when I got done, I talked to him and he got me in front of a lot of people and opened a lot of doors for me. And he's been a great coach for me and he's helped me out quite a bit. And without people like that kind of steering you in the right direction, you never know where you're going to go. I didn't know if it was going to be coaching or scouting or what you're going to do, but this has been a really nice second life for me, to be honest with you. You're still around the game, but you don't take the wins and losses home with you like you did as a player. I can sleep at night. I just hope that people don't get annoyed by listening to me on TV. That's why I try not to get in people's faces too much. I don't like to get on social media. I feel like people hear you on TV enough. That's enough. I don't want to overdo it, but it's a great job. And honestly, this job now doing the Flyers since Jonesy became president, this has been a really fun job too, because I think the one thing I've missed, doing the National is awesome, right? Because you see the best of the best, you go in deep into the spring, into the playoffs and Stanley Cup finals and whatnot. But to finally have like a rooting interest in a club and wanting to be a part of it, to me, is something that I missed. Because when you're doing the National, I don't care who wins. I really don't. Yeah. We hope for a nice broadcast. But when the game's over, headsets are off and on to the next game. Sometimes you don't remember who played. I mean, it's they all lump together. But now that I'm doing the Flyers, it's fun. Like you're rooting for these guys and you want them to do well. And so that part of I'm really fortunate too.
Yeah, John Forslund has said something similar. So it's funny you say that. But you mentioned something interesting there that I've always kind of wondered about with the Philadelphia market, which is it does seem like, I know Carter Hart has kind of solidified himself as the goalie there, but that place has churned through so many goalies over the years. And do you think it is that media piece? Like, is that why it's so hard to play there, do you think, for goalies?
I think it's toned down now because, when I was there, we were in the thick of a time when the expectations were to win a Stanley Cup. We had very good teams. You think about the Lindros era, even the post-Lindros era where we had guys like Danny Briere and, Carter and Richards and Pronger. Our expectations were to compete for a Stanley Cup. And with that comes pressure. And with that comes comparisons to Bernie Perron, who was the only guy who ever won a Stanley Cup here in Philadelphia. So, that's where it was difficult. And no goalie was able to come through. I mean, it looked promising for a young Pelle Lindbergh. Unfortunately, his life was taken too early. And Ron Hextall was the next guy to come up. you know, great years, couldn't get through to the finish line. Garth Snow was there as well, myself, like, you know, the pressure was there to follow up what Bernie did, and the expectations were to win, and we never did it. So I think that's where the tough, you know, love came for the goalies there. But I think since then, the expectations have dropped. This has not been a Stanley Cup bound team or a team that's been expected to compete for a Stanley Cup. So with that, I think you get some breathing room as a goaltender. Now you can kind of like just play and not have to worry about, like, if you give up a bad goal, is it the end of the world? No, they got other issues. They've had other issues. So I think for Hart, he's been able to kind of like mature into this starting goaltender role, and it's been a good environment for him.
Yeah. So for our listeners that may not realize it, and I'm sure you get probably tired of getting asked about this, but Brian holds the record for longest shutout streak. Joey Decord set a franchise record shutout streak very recently. But Brian, to put things in perspective, Joey went like, what, a game and a half or two games, I think, without giving up a goal, and it felt like a really long time. Brian went 5.5 games, 332 minutes while playing for the Arizona Coyotes. So Joey made a save on Thursday where he's lying on his stomach and he just throws a pad up in the air and robs Connor McMichael with the kind of the scorpion type save, right? And my question for you, and I hope this is asking in a little bit of a different way from the many questions you've been asked over the years about your shutout streak, but what is going through your head in that scenario where, and I'm a goalie too, so I know what it's like to get hot. I don't know what it's like to have 5.5 shutouts in a row, but the puck is just hitting you no matter what. And even when you think you're down and out and you're going to get scored on, somehow you just throw a body part in the air and the puck still hits it. And then on the other side of things, when you're not playing like that, and no matter what you do, the puck is going in, even on shots that you're like, all right, I think I should absolutely stop this one, and it goes through. Can you explain that phenomenon to our listeners a little bit to tell them what it's like to be a goalie? Because I don't think people understand just how mental of a game hockey is when you're the goaltender.
Yeah, it's a great point. I think the reason why it's such a difficult position to play, it's not the physical aspect of it, although you got to have great physical attributes to play now. I mean, you look at the athleticism on these guys, it's through the roof. It really is the mental side of it. I mean, it's a lot of pressure. You're the last line of defense. You know, you can erase a lot of the mistakes that a team can make just with the way that you play. So it's tough on guys. Now, to be in the zone, you know, that so-called zone that people always talk about, I mean, I didn't get into it very often when I played, never for like the stretch that I had when I had the shutout streak. I mean, it was truly magical. I mean, you know, there were times when my reads were off and I'd get away with it. There were times when I didn't see a puck and it would hit the post or miss the net. You know, and there's times when you play when those situations happen and the puck is in the back of the net and you just move on. You never think about getting a shutout when you go into a game. I never went into games thinking, boy, I got to get a shutout tonight. You know, you just try to you try to have a short memory. You focus on the next play, the next rush, the next shot, and hope that you give your team a chance to win. And so to be in that zone is, I mean, it's magic. It really is. It was a fun time. The team rallied around it. They played hard. They defended like heck. They were disciplined. I mean, it was a true team effort to come up with that shutout streak. And if you look at our stats after, I think we won 4 games the rest of the year after that. I mean, we were really a bad team. And the wheels flew off like you wouldn't believe. And guys were relieved when I finally gave up that goal. They were like, Jesus, now I can finally get back to drinking beer. You know what I mean? Because like I was so nervous to mess up. I didn't want to come in hungover or anything like that for you. You know, I said for me, I was like, we were doing a great thing, but you know, it's fun. It was a fun time. And conversely, when you're struggling and you don't make the saves that you need to make, that's where you have the sleepless nights. That's where it's a tough position, and you got to find a way to dig deep, to continue to, you know, work at your fundamentals and find ways to get out of it. But boy, I mean, if I knew the answer to all of it, I would write a book, I'd teach it, and I'd probably make a lot of money. But it's just a crazy position that some sickos like us just like to play.
Yeah, it truly is. It's both the worst and best position in sports all at the same time. Yeah. So, yeah, it's funny. You know, another thing, and totally shifting gears here, but your kid is making it to the pro level here. He's in the AHL with the Belleville Senators. One thing that we thought was interesting, the Kraken just had a prospect named Tyson Jugnauth who switched from playing for Wisconsin to playing in the WHL. He's with the Portland Winterhawks now. And your son Tyler had kind of a similar switch that happened where he went from Boston University to the Ottawa 67s of the OHL. I'm wondering what made him make that decision, and I guess what kind of guidance did you give him on that?
So, okay, well, you got to go back to my experience, right? Yeah. So I was going to go to college and decide to play in the Western League and went rated second round to first round, ended up getting drafted, right? Played lots. And, you know, the reason why I went and played major juniors is because when I was in high school in Rhode Island, as a freshman and sophomore, I played three games my first 2 years of high school. I pretty much was a JV goalie. And that stuck with me when I was thinking about college, about the lack of games that if you get stuck behind an upperclassman, you don't play. Right. So that was why I did what I did. And it worked out well for me. To Tyler's situation, he was drafted in the first round by Ottawa, had an injury plague draft year, you know, so he missed a lot of reps and a lot of the development. He got to BU and they had a lot of bodies there. You know, post COVID, they had, I think they had 29 guys on their roster. So there was a lot of older kids and the team got off to a horrific start. And in my opinion, I felt like the coach was panicking for his job. And, you know, this is a program that has fancied itself on being a, you know, a top 10 every year. And, you know, it's a good program. And I just think there was a lot of panic there. And they started to play the older guys and play the younger guys less and less. And for Tyler, who had missed a lot of development the year prior in his draft year, I felt it was important that he play, that he didn't need practice time. You know, in college, you only play two games a week. He needed to play games. He needed touches. He needed to be in situations so that he could develop. So that's why we chose to go to the OHL. And, you know, unfortunately for Tyler, he's had to deal with a lot of injuries since his draft year, even before the draft year. And he's dealt with a ton of adversity. It's been a hard road for him. He was even hurt at the start of this year. And he's, you know, he's getting a hard lesson on the rigors of professional hockey and how difficult it can be. And I give him a lot of credit because he's a mentally strong kid. He's battling through it and he's finally healthy. He's played eight games now in Belleville. They're easing him in. Minutes are starting to increase. So, you know, it's that's why we chose the OHL. Unfortunately, he's, you know, the injury, you know, when the injuries hit, I mean, there's nothing you can do about that. It happens at any level, but I'm proud of the way he's handled the adversity. And I hope I pray every day that the injuries are done and he can move on and get going with his career, because I think it's he's a talented kid, and I hope he gets to show that here soon.
Yeah. Well, yeah, we'll root for him. I'm sorry to hear he's dealt with so much there, and yeah, hoping for the best. Sounds like it's coming along. One thing I think that like parents kind of struggle with is when they start to realize that their kid is good at a sport, they tend to put like a lot of pressure on them and probably steer them in the wrong direction sometimes. Why is it so common for a pro athlete to have that rub off on their kids? You know what I mean? Like, how is it that, I guess, just what kind of mindset did you have in raising him to help him get to this level?
When Tyler was young, I mean, I had him play all sports. Like, I was not a dad that was like all hockey all the time. I mean, you know, he didn't play in that famed brick tournament. Mm-hmm. I said no to it. I said, no, Tyler plays baseball in the summer, and we weren't going to do that. So he gives me a hard time about that because he missed out on an experience as a kid. But I wanted him to play all sports. I wanted him to figure out what he wanted to do. And once he told me that he wanted to take hockey a little bit more seriously, then, you know, we stepped on the gas a little bit more. And, you know, I think the one thing he saw in me is that I'm a competitive person. And I think that trait was handed down to him, whether it was consciously or unconsciously. I don't know. I mean, he just, you know, he's got my genetics as far as that is concerned. And my wife is a competitive person too. And I just think that he was driven. And, you know, once you see him have the drive, then you just try and put him in situations and put him in environments where he can kind of do his thing. And, you know, and I think the one thing that my wife said early on was that she begged me not to have him be a goalie because, you know, it was a tough go for her in my career, being a backup in a lot of places. So she just said, please, can you just, you know, push him and not being a goalie? And I said, fair enough. And he chose his own path and being a forward. So it was, and it's nice because it's healthy between the two of us, right? There's not the pressure for me to teach him to be a goalie. Like, I mean, I know I think I know hockey pretty well, but I don't know the ins and outs of being a forward because I didn't play that position.
Right.
You know, I know it from a different angle as a goalie, but so I think I can help him in certain ways, but at certain times I can back off and I can use others to give him direction and push, which is nice. And I'm not afraid to delegate responsibility. And I know when I don't know something, I think I'm very good at finding resources and people to help him. And that's what I did as he was growing up. So yeah. He wanted to be a hockey player. And when he said that, I said, I think I can help you there, kid.
I know a thing or two about that. So, so just a couple more for you here, Brian, and thank you so much. You've been great with your time. First off, I do want to get your take. There's been a lot of scuttlebutts around the Cutter Gauthier situation here. And just because you're in Philadelphia, I'd love to just hear your take on that whole situation. You've certainly had a front row seat. You were even involved in the interview, in the immediate aftermath of that, when they were kind of talking about the trade. What's been your viewpoint on the whole thing?
Yeah, I mean, look, a tough situation, right? I mean, you know, the news that I received and the information that I had is that, you know, Cutter made it clear to the Flyers that he didn't want to be a Philadelphia Flyer. And, you know, I think at that point, when that happens, you know, it's important for the organization to protect that information and make sure that information doesn't get out, because now they have to try and take an asset and move the asset for a fair return. And so I give Keith Jones and Danny Briere a ton of credit. They've had this information for a long time, and not a lot of people outside of their circle knew about it. And they were able to make a trade that I think is fair and equal return. So, you know, Cutter's going to be a very good NHL player. He's got a lot of talent, and I think Flyer fans were excited for him to be a Philadelphia Flyer. But when you got to move them, you got to make sure that you get something in good return. I think they did. They had a need on defense, a guy that could run a power play, and that's what they get in Jamie Drysdale. And I think for the Flyers organization too, they, you know, I know they've gotten some criticism about the way that they handled, you know, the post, the aftermath after the trade, but you got to understand that when you're trading a fifth overall pick, you have to, I think it's important that you explain to your fans why you're trading a fifth overall pick who was the top forward at the World Junior Championships. I mean, these guys don't grow on trees, and now you're trading them. So for the Flyers, I think they had to tell their fans, like, look, he didn't want to play here. So we needed to make a move. We kept it quiet. Here's why we kept it quiet, just in case, you know, Gauthier changes his mind. We don't want to get it out there that he said he didn't want to be a Flyer. Then the fans would turn on him, right? The minute he struggled, they would turn on him. So they were protecting him, but they were also protecting the asset too, if they needed to make the trade. So I give a lot of credit to everybody involved. You know, look, Cutter is now in another place, and he's going to be a good Anaheim Duck for a long time. He's going to be a very good player. And the Flyers get a very good young defenseman in Jamie Drysdale, and you move on. I mean, it's, you know, what's unfortunate is that, you know, I think he could have been a good Flyer, and I'm, you know, I'm biased towards Philadelphia. I played there when times are good. It's a great sports city, great fan base. And when it's going good, it's great. And I think he just misses out on an opportunity in that situation. For me, I'm bummed, you know, to hear that. But life goes on. He's going to be a great NHLer, and I think we got a good one in Jamie Drysdale as well.
Yeah, and that fan base from the outside looking in seems very level-headed no matter what, so I'm sure they totally accepted the explanation there. I say that in jest. All right, last one for you. So we have a...
be nice to the fans of Philly, you know? No, they get a bad rap sometimes, you know?
No, but, like, they are so passionate, yeah. And that's what's so amazing. Right, is that they care so much, and that's what you want more than anything. Even if it's harsh criticism, I just think the world of Philly fans, right? Because they love their sports team, and they don't tune out when the team's doing poorly. They kind of lean in and kind of give their feedback, and I think there's something to be said about that as far as the sports.
Well, I will say this, and I didn't anticipate this being the case, but this whole situation really has reinvigorated the Flyer fan base. I think in the last 7-8 years, what you're saying, I agree with for the most part, but I think there's been some apathy in Philadelphia. Uh-huh. There's been some people who have tuned out a little bit. And I've never seen that before in my time of being a Flyer since I was drafted in 95. I never witnessed that. It's kind of weird to see empty seat, people not showing up. But now with Keith Jones and Danny Briere and Dan Hilferty running this team, it's been inching back, right? Yeah. You know, you can feel it. Now it's still a football town. Don't get me wrong. It's all about the Eagles. But the Eagles are going to be done here pretty soon. And then it turns into Flyer, you know, season. And you're starting to feel there's some energy coming. And then what happened here with the trade, and, you know, and the Flyers letting the information out that he didn't want to be a Flyer, I think it kind of reinvigorated a fan base that, I tell you what, they're fired up right now. And this is the type of energy that I had when I played here and witnessed and felt and loved. And I feel like there's an energy around this club right now that is really positive, and it's good to be around.
Yeah, I saw him doing a little choo-choo train on the ice this morning. I think that was this morning, at least. Looks like they're having a good time, so the players. Last thing for you. So we do a segment on our podcast called Goalie Gear Corner, where we just talk about gear setups. It's really not good radio, but I personally enjoy it. So you had a setup when you were with the Coyotes, and I think it was the setup that you were wearing during the streak, in fact, where it was the Eagle gear that had like a big X going across. And I totally wanted those pads when I was a kid, but looking back, I didn't have a great five hole, and that would have been a nightmare for me because it's literally just like two big arrows pointing at the five hole. Did you ever feel like there were guys aiming for that spot once you started wearing those?
I had holes everywhere. What are you talking about? You know, it's funny about those pads. That was like they were a box pad. It was like the first real box pad that maybe Vaughn made a. Maybe Velocities they made, I think that they were kind of squared off, you know?
Yeah, but the knee rolls were kind of gone and all that, right?
Yeah. And now the pads nowadays are so stiff. They're like the Eagle version, but super stiff, you know? And what I found with those Eagle pads was, you know, sometimes I'd stand up, sometimes I'd half butterfly or whatnot. And I found with those pads, you had to butterfly. But if you butterflied, you really sealed the ice very well because of the way they were made. You know, it's funny. When those pads came out, I saw Robert Esch wearing them in Philadelphia. And I was like, I puked. I was like, oh, those things are gross. What the hell is he wearing? And I hit such a bad streak in Phoenix. I was so bad that I just needed to change gear. And Vaughn was, you know, they were dragging their feet, getting stuff out. And so was CCM or whatever else I was wearing. And the rep for Eagle was in town. We were in Buffalo, I think it was. And Stan Wilson, our equipment guy, says, talk to him. You know what I mean? And the guy told me that I can get you gear in less than a week. I promise. It'll get to the NHL. It'll be in your locker in less than a week. I'm sorry, less than a week. And I said, you can do that? He goes, yeah. He made that gear for me, and it was there within like 5 days. And so I put it on, started to stop the puck, and I used it for a little bit. It was all because I was struggling so bad is why I decided to go to it. And, you know, looking at, eventually the design grew on me, but initially I was like, man, those are gross pads.
That's funny. Well, it's funny that you thought that, right? Because I think everyone else looking at it was probably like, wow, bold statement there by Brian Boucher, you know, to wear the shoot it here in my five hole pads. Yeah, and it's funny too how like I've always thought that buying a new piece of gear, like when I was a kid, right, I'd get like a new blocker or something that shouldn't have any impact on your game, and all of a sudden that would give you a big confidence boost to like have something different. It's funny how stuff like that works, right? And in your case, you're saying it even kind of changed your style a little bit because you had to butterfly more wearing those pads.
Absolutely. I think if you're struggling, change something. Change the tape, change the stick, change the glove, change something. And you never know what it can spark. I don't know how long it'll take, how long that good run will last. But oftentimes if you see somebody change their gear, you know that they're struggling. That's a hint that they were struggling.
Yeah. Well, and you also wore those Vaughn pads with like the bullseye on them, the big circle. Yeah. So maybe you're onto something there. You just wanted people to shoot at your five. Anyway, thank you so much, Brian Boucher. Really, really appreciate the time. I think this has been a super fun conversation, and hopefully we'll connect with you in Seattle one of these days.
Yeah, I'd love that. Thanks for having me, guys.
Thanks, Brian.
All right. Thank you again to Brian Boucher for taking time out to talk to us. I think that was such a fun conversation. John, I really loved the little mini goalie gear corner that we did in there. I think that he like genuinely enjoyed that.
Oh, he loved
that,
it. He was like, chat. Oh, yeah, you want to talk about that stuff?
Yeah. Yeah.
He doesn't quite say it like that, but yeah.
I think he could tell that I had done some digging to figure out what gear he was wearing back in the day. So,
oh, that was a great insight too on him switching to that gear, right?
Yeah. So, yeah. Yeah. Thank you to Brian, but also thank you to Blair Cofield from Discover Warner Brothers, or Warner Brothers Discover, I think is how you say it directly. Turner, effectively. She was very helpful in helping us get that set up. So really appreciate that. Really appreciate the time from Brian Boucher, and hope you all enjoyed that too. The plan was to talk to him at the Winter Classic. I had asked him because he was at the Kraken game, that Philadelphia Flyers game before the Winter Classic. So I asked him then, hey, would you be open to doing a podcast interview after practice? And then media just ran super long and we couldn't find him. So that's just how it happened. And so we circled back, and I'm really glad that he was willing to take time out, because that was a super fun interview. So we appreciate it. Okay, let's move on to our segments. Our first segment is an update on the weekly wager. Do we have a new weekly wager? Because I'm not really sure if we can call it weekly at this point, because we haven't been particularly consistent. It's really more of like a periodic wager.
The branding is tough. It's tough.
Yeah.
We might need to work on that.
But we do like alliteration, right? Like, is there another word that we can put in there that's kind of like periodic, but a periodic, what's a word for bet that starts with P, or
a periodic proposition?
A bi-weekly bet.
We'll workshop it. We'll come up with something good.
All right, for now it's the weekly wager.
So we didn't have
so what do you got?
We didn't have a wager last week. We just checked in and then totally forgot to do a new one. So we're going to do one this week. There are likely to be two games between now and when we next record. It's the Oilers and the Maple Leafs at home. So I'm going to say the wager for this week is, in those two games, who will lead the Seattle Kraken in hits.
Oh my God. What?
And John gets to go first.
Oh, great.
John loves this stash. So yeah. That's good. That's a good one.
We want a winner here.
I mean, I'm not even looking at any stats, but I'll guess Will Borgen's probably leading the team in hits. So I'm going to go with Will Borgen.
I'm going to go with Brandon Tanev.
All right. And I will go with... I'll go with Adam Larson. I think he's just going to be missing his buddy there, and he's just going to take it out on the next two teams. So we got...
Unless his buddy's back. His buddy could be back.
Oh, that's true.
They're all day-to-day. Everybody's day-to-day.
That would make him excited. So maybe he will hit people because he's excited. So okay. We'll go with Belligerent, Bill,
day-to-day,
Turbo, and the Big Cat. Okay, got it.
All right. Well, that's our weekly wager. So very exciting segment.
Exciting, yeah.
We now move on from our weekly wager to our weekly one-timers. Whoopsh. Our first weekly one-timer. Whoopsh. The ECHL is expanding once again. They had the Lake Tahoe Swamp Donkeys, or whatever that team was that they brought in a couple months ago. The Night Monsters. And now they're bringing in the Bloomington, Illinois Bloomers.
Something like that.
No, we don't know what the name of the team is yet, but they're Bloomington, Illinois, something or others. So that's something. It's interesting.
That is something. I learned the more I know is Bloomington is not just in Minnesota.
Yeah, I think there's a few of those. I think there's an Indiana. I think there's an Illinois. Yeah, I think there's a few of those.
I don't think there's one in California, for the record. And there probably is, now that I said that.
There's little towns that are blooming all over.
I could be wrong on the count on this, but I think we're up to 30 ECHL teams now. So if you're looking for a 1-to-1 ratio with NHL teams, there could be a couple more out there expansion wise.
Well, how about that? Our next weekly one timer. My favorite topic, regional sports networks. Let's get an update from our RSN expert, John Barr. What happened, John?
Well, I think we were going to kick this to Curtis, but I'll go ahead and read it. Diamond Sports RSNs is the parent company, or was the parent company, of Bally's RSNs, and they've filed for bankruptcy over the last year. But they apparently are in it striking a deal with Amazon to come onto their service, which will kind of, you know, take them essentially off cable and probably put them on Amazon, similar to the NFL games. A lot of details to flesh out, pricing, availability, stuff like that. But it's an interesting move for a business model that seems to be kind of on its last legs as far as RSNs on cable in general. So it's something to keep an eye on.
And how does this impact the outlook of the Kraken? I feel like there's some Kraken conversation to be had here on this front. Am I right?
It's not necessarily a plug and play like you would expect Root to kind of all of a sudden have a deal with Amazon. They're publicly, the Kraken has talked about going away from Root and probably going more to an over-the-air type solution, which is what's been going on in Arizona and Vegas, I think, this season. So I don't think it's like as easy as the Kraken just being added to the list, because Bally's / Diamond Sports is like almost like plug and play. You have this production and you just, instead of airing it on cable, you're airing it on Amazon. Kraken won't have that scenario unless somehow Root goes the same route, which I do not think is happening. So I think it'll be a couple years before we know what this really looks like for the long term or for the semi-long term. But I think it's something I had to give here, and this seems to be a good option.
Our next weekly one-timer. Whoopsh. Val Nichushkin is in the player assistance program from the NHL and the NHLPA. He's been in some interesting spots here over the last 6 months or so. He was the one in the midst of that kind of weird, scandalous thing that happened at the Four Seasons Hotel in Seattle during the playoffs last season, when he had somebody in his hotel room that seemed to be intoxicated in some way, and she left an ambulance, and then he just kind of disappeared from the team for like, I think, for the rest of the playoffs, if I'm not mistaken. Yep. And then he came back this season, and it was just like, oh, well, you know, it's all taken care of. He's all good. So nobody really got to the bottom of what actually happened there. But now he's in the player assistance program. So you never know what that means. If it's, you just never know what that means. So whenever we hear that news, we're always just hoping for the best for the player. Obviously, he's there's some weird stuff happening there. So
yeah,
that's that.
Could be totally unrelated, but it was a bit disorienting when he came back to the team this year and they just kind of had this vibe of, oh yeah, we explained or dealt with all that. But none of that actually ever happened. It was just, it was a bizarre approach.
I mean, he was cleared, right? And I think he did not do anything wrong as far as like violating an NHL rule. But they did acknowledge that he'd been cleared.
Right.
They didn't like sweep it completely under the rug.
No. Like they came out and were like, oh yeah, that's all taken care of. He was cleared. I was like, okay, that doesn't really explain very much.
I know, but are we really entitled to it? I don't know.
No. I mean, it's just curious now that this is back in the news. That's all.
I'm always curious, but yeah.
I mean, we still don't know what happened to Corey Perry, what he did.
It's true.
Yeah, and he's rumored to be like on the market. It's like people would sign him, and he's cleared to come back as well. But do we need to know? I mean, it
depends how entertaining the news is.
Well, need and want is a different story.
I'm intrigued. Yeah. So
yes.
If our next I'm weekly a team, one-timer. Though,
I would be researching that quite a bit, both of them. So
go ahead and do your sound.
Oh.
Jacob Markstrom is injured, lower body injury. This is applicable because the Kraken they're kind of in the playoff conversation with the Kraken. So definitely important news. Dustin Wolf was called up. So that's that. Anything you want to add on that one?
No Wolf sound?
Oh,
there we go.
There you go. Yeah.
Our final weekly one-timer. Marc-Andre Fleury moved into sole possession of second place on the NHL's all-time wins list, surpassing Patrick Waugh and now trailing only Martin Brodeur. I don't think he's going to get anywhere close to Martin Brodeur, right? Isn't he still like a long, long way off?
Yeah, he's got to like play like a regular full schedule for like 6 or 7 more years to even have a shot at it. So I don't think that's happening. So, no. I mean, well, that's the reality of this, of that. Like, these are probably the three guys that are going to like have that forever because goalies do not play nearly as many games as they used to. And Brodeur was legendary. He'd play like over 70 games a season, I think, for several seasons. So that just is not happening anytime soon, unless they expand the schedule to like 120 games or something. I don't know, but
I can't take that. Don't do that.
No, it's like the 300-win starting pitcher in baseball. It's just, you're not really going to approach those benchmarks anymore with the way the game's played.
Do they not start? Why is that the case?
So going really far back, starting pitchers would start more frequently. And these days, they take extra days of rest or have a larger rotation. Oh, okay. So you're not starting as much. But more so than that, it's that pitchers don't go as deep into games. So if you're coming out in the fifth inning as opposed to the eighth or ninth, then you could come out with a lead, but your team could lose it.
Might lose it. Okay. Yeah. All right. Thanks. Well, I know.
And they really don't go over like 100 pitches anymore.
Yeah.
Hardly ever, right? Okay. They have a pretty hard pitch count these days.
All right.
Our final weekly one-timer, the U18 Women's Championship is in the books. What happened, John?
U.S. beat Czechia in the gold medal game, 5-1. Woo! Canada beat Finland 8-1. The big kind of story out of this, yes, the U.S. winning is a big deal. This is essentially World Juniors for the women. But it was a huge accomplishment for Czechia, who'd never won a semifinal game before. They've got a bronze medal before, but never got a silver. Apparently, like 600,000 people watched the game in Czechia. So pretty legendary moment, and hopefully it's a sign of good things to come from them, because the women's game needs more powerhouses like the U.S. and Canada, and Finland and Sweden are pretty good, but getting Czechia in there in the mix would be pretty cool too. So very, very cool stuff coming out of Zug, Switzerland.
All right, and those are our weekly one-timers. And we're going to close the show not with Tweets of the Week, but with sort of, well, no, it is. It's a Goalie Gear Corner! I was going to just water that down because we already sort of did Goalie Gear Corner with Brian Boucher on this episode, but also Anne-Renée Davian had her mask revealed for PWHL Montreal, and it is a thing of beauty. It's got some Montreal landmarks on it. It's got some like legendary players. Yeah, it's great. It's a really, really great mask, so go check that out. Very, very pretty piece of work here.
Love it.
Anything
I
you'd
love
add?
This one. No, I love this one. Yeah. I like the colors.
I do like on the back, she's got this, it's like a, well, first of all, it appears to be her dog driving a convertible mini, and it's on like this weird winding road, and it seems to have flags in all the spots that she's stopped, including my alma mater of Wisconsin. So that's pretty cool.
Wow, that's cool.
There.
Yeah.
All right. Love it. All right, John, do you want to take it over here?
Oh, am I doing this again? Okay.
Yeah.
That wraps up episode 270 of the Sound of Hockey podcast. Jesus, dude. Leave your 5-star review on Apple Podcasts, and we'll read it on the next week's show. Subscribe on Spotify, subscribe on Apple Podcasts. Join our Patreon at patreon.com/soundofhockey. Stick taps to Andy. We'll talk to you all very soon for episode 271.
Man up.
Cheers.
He had to man up. So he crawled up on that cross and he stuck it out. And he manned up. Yeah, he manned up. And taught us all what real manning up is about.
All right.